Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings, family, and welcome to the H2O Network. I'm trying to get Olvar Ernesto Pichardo on the line, but until I get him on the line, welcome. This is our fourth sector, if you will, on thinking differently about Lugumi, continuing the conversation. And let me go, as I have all these tabs open, to my Skype and add Olvar Ernesto Pichardo to the conversation. And the telephone is ringing. Olvar might be having some technical difficulties, but I'm just going to keep dropping him and trying to bring him into the phone call. Make sure, family, that you go into the archives and you listen to part one, part two, and part three. Very interesting conversations, to say the least. So you can catch up on the conversation. I know that last night was CLBA's anniversary. We'll be talking about that today. And we'll also be talking about certain parts of the Penal Code that we've been discussing throughout this whole conversation in this series. Pick up the phone, Skype. You gotta love technology. Family, hold on. I'm going to call. It might be on my end, so I'm going to call back into my switchboard and also try to pull Oba into the telephone call. So sit back, relax, and hold on tight. We are coming. And I am back, and now I'm going to add Oba to the call. See if this works. His green light is on, but Skype is not letting me pull him in. The telephone is ringing, and hopefully we'll have Olvar Ernesto Pichardo on the line very soon. Try one more time. If not, we will have Olvar call in on his cell phone. You gotta love technology, I tell you, but this is what it is. Try Olvar's cell and see if he picks up the telephone. Bendishon, you're live on the air right now. I'm calling you through Skype.
You are?
Yes, on your silly welly. I don't know what is going
on. I don't know what's going on with this machine.
I don't know what is going on, but as Anthony Peake would say as we hit dead silence on the air, the archons, the little technological devils, just don't want us to talk about these topics, but you know.
It looks like.
That's all right, because we prevail and we go to the cell phone. That's what we do. But before we even get started on this conversation, I just want to say congratulations on the anniversary of CLBA. I wish you many, many blessings in everything that you do. And I'm quite frankly, I am excited for all of the things that are here percolating. I'm excited about the conversations we're doing. I'm excited about the people, you know, in Cuba and here who are getting on board for many, many things to come. And I don't want to blow up the spot, but I'm happy to be on the boat rowing with you, to be family. And just congratulations. I thought about you guys all day yesterday. I really wish that I was in Miami, but my spirit was there. So I just want to say thank you for everything that you do for our community and basically being the godfather to everybody. I mean, that's really what it is. Yeah, and that's basically it.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much. It was a long night. We started about 5 o'clock to play. This thing went on till about just after midnight. So it was wonderful. You mentioned Cuba. We had one, two, three, about 5 people who hadn't been here for very long from Cuba. And they got to come in and share with us and experience openness, right? And sharing of knowledge without reservation. And that was very interesting. What I did yesterday was a PowerPoint presentation on the Constitution, Cuba and Puerto Rico, back in the 1800s, and some of the municipal laws, which has been what we've been doing with this Fred Burn. Excuse me. And it was really great. It was great to see how, as we're going down the lines of each article of the Constitution and the Penal Code, how from Cuba we're making the connections, getting ahead of this information, which is something that I keep getting as a feedback, right? These are people that, you know, they were born, raised, and went to school in Cuba, you know? And yet, this kind of information is something that they never heard of, never had. So it was very rewarding for them and for us, and particularly for me, because I'm also learning where they're at, you know, and learning from them and how they've survived for decades in the context of living within a regime that presents the religion, our religion, as something of culture, or at least from the category of culture, and has labeled it as folklore, right? And some of the people that were there yesterday are professional folklore, Cuba folklore dancers. And so by profession, they had to be exposed and learned about the religion and how things are, right? And the Orishas and so on. And it's amazing to me that if anyone should be having this training in terms of the Orishas and history, Cuban history, would be them, because they would need to have all this information so they can characterize it in their choreographies and so on, right?
Mm-hmm.
And yet, they quickly began to see that stuff that I was talking about is stuff they had never heard of. And I'm going like, but all I'm doing is presenting the exact language, right? I'm not altering this. This is not my interpretation. You know, this is not third party. This is straight up. This is what the article number is, and this is how it was written. You know? And they're looking at me like going like, yeah, well, we never saw it. So bottom line here is that they got the opportunity to get their minds around, wait a minute, here's a new political system that comes in for 50 plus years. You know, on its face, it appears that it has been very progressive and beneficial in exposing the religion, at least in the context of a folkloric context. It's allowed it to be exposed, whereas before, up to 1959, that was not the case. And all of a sudden, they had not seen it from this other perspective, which is the religion got redressed, really. It has gotten removed its context of sacredness, its context of that as a religion, as a classification, has been removed. What was created was the folklore. And I said to them, think about one thing here. Do Catholic priests, does the Catholic Church, or does the government, does any government, take the most sacred, like Catholic priest ordination, do they put that on a stage for the fellows to see, for tourist attraction? Do they display this? No. Do they take and do folkloric presentations of the Catholic saints for public consumption, for tourism? The answer is no. I mean, have you ever seen anyone dress up as Our Lady of Charity or St. Barbara and walking around and speaking or mimicking their characteristics so that it is with sacred Catholic songs to support the show, presented as a show? That I don't think so. You know, the best we get is the characterization of the Jesus, you know, the birth of Jesus or something. We don't take Catholicism to this other level, right? Folkloric level. This is a lower level. Nobody messes with that. But like I said, again, in history, that which is African, that which is the black man or black woman, is presented for the entertainment of the society. Right?
And you know,
Remember American history?
Yeah.
To do this, right?
Well, they still do. And I was going to say, for people who are like, okay, well, I've never been to Cuba, I don't understand. Well, I got news for you. If you've ever been to NOLA, which I've been to NOLA many times, they do this extremely brilliantly. In the same context that they do in Cuba and Brazil and a lot of other places, they make voodoo and Orisha, because the culture of NOLA in Louisiana and the South is very complicated. We just can't get into that there. It's like a different country. But in comparison to what you're saying, it's the same thing. They make it folklore. And people,
yes.
I was blown away when I went to NOLA for the first time many years ago, how hogans and priests of voodoo and also Orisha would have tourist groups. And, you know, I actually went on them because I was very fascinated and curious how one is taking something so sacred and allowing complete strangers, Ache, to be up in their house and, you know, to do all of these things like it's a museum project. And I thought it was very fascinating. So in America, family, they do the same thing in NOLA, if you
have
a comparison.
Which was, by the way, owned by Spain and then they sold it to the French.
Hello. Exactly.
And who are both the Spanish and the French at the time? Catholics. Hello.
Indeed.
So, I found that, you know, I gave them that to think about, right?
Mm-hmm.
I said, you know, you've all been conditioned to participate and view yourselves in this particular manner, right? This is another perspective to think about. Right? I said, look at what's done. I mean, our people are dressed with our formal religious attire. The gala outfit used by the Iyawo during ordination, priest ordination, right? you're actually using that kind of attire and then dancing using our sacred songs. And then they are mimicking being possessed by the deity. They're trying to characterize that, right? In the dancing and so on. That's what they're trying to project and capture. I said, think about that. And they're doing this also, they not only do this in halls, they do this out in the middle of the street as a tourist attraction. And what I find extraordinary is that while they're doing that and displaying that which is sacred to us in a folkloric context, you know, the background setting, the scene in the background is the Cathedral of Havana. So that if you want to know anything about Catholic, you walk into the cathedral and participate in a mass or something like that, but that's about it. All right. But there are no shows going on in there using the most sacred components of Catholicism. I said, think about this. I said, they're all being used as entertainers. So again, it's been repackaged, conditioning. It's been repackaged. When the Conjunto Folclórico Nacional of Cuba was created, I mean, what was that for? Was to create these kinds of professional presentations to exploit that which is sacred to us. And what came from that? We all started recording our hundreds of our sacred songs and so on and so forth. People now buy these CDs and they're listening to them as if it was just simply music, African music. This is not African music. This is not African pop music. These are the songs that we use, actually use in ceremony.
They're alchemy. They're alchemy.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's why priests, I've heard priests, and we've actually had this conversation, me and you, Oba, on air and other programs. This is why you've always said, from an Egun standpoint and an Orisha standpoint, it's not good just to sit down and listen to Orisha music because you have Ache on your head. Hello? You have a portal, and you're literally calling in to existence. An energy. It's not entertainment.
It's not.
It really is not. And people, when I say that, they look at me like I'm crazy, but I'm like, I can't sit down and listen to Yemaya songs like that. I'm a priestess of Yemaya. I don't want Yemaya coming down to earth like that. I got a portal on my head. Hello?
Well, it's not entertainment, folks.
Yeah.
Yeah. In ritual and in ceremonial context, it's not entertainment. However, it's now been presented in that context of entertainment, right? So I'm not judging whether it's right or wrong. I'm just simply saying, observe it from this other lens. What other religion out there does this? I don't know of any other that does this. And again, we see that as being created by the force of the state. It's not an independent thing. So we went from a Catholic state religion to a regime state imposed entertainment. Right? It's quite interesting.
It is,
just looking at it from a legal historical standpoint.
It is very interesting because I'm thinking to myself, like I'm thinking about Catholicism and Buddhism and other faiths, if you will. And I don't think that I've ever seen someone write a book or put out alchemy, musical alchemy, pertaining specifically to their private rituals. I mean, it probably exists. I just have never come across it. But I guess in the nature aspect of reality, it's out there in a plethora. You know, I talked to my Native brothers and sisters in Saskatchewan. They're having the same issues that we're having. And, you know, the old guard, the elders, don't want – these things are not meant to be made public. They're sacred dress and just all kinds of stuff. It's very fascinating how many earth traditions have become entertainment popularized in that way. And this is, you know, we're really messing with the essence of alchemy. It sort of makes you wonder, like, does that have an effect on the readings of the year, Oba, and all this energy being put out there by people and being used by people who are really unaware? What type of energy is that really percolating in the environment, and does that have any connection with these old dues that are coming up in at the beginning of the year? I'm just saying, I'm just throwing it out there. I don't know.
It raises a question. And I don't think anyone pays attention to it from this lens, right? And so there's no scrutiny of it because everyone has fallen into, as it was strategically crafted to be, which is entertainment, right? So then we go from that lens and we go with it. People love to go to Kula from the propaganda standpoint. What do they see? They see these people out in the middle of the street doing these dances and dressed in our ceremonial wear and so on. And they see that as a freedom of expression, right? And so they're not putting that in this other context to go with it. So I'm just saying that came up, and it was really interesting to bottom line was they want access to more information which they do not have. Basically, they make the best of what they have, and that kind of sums up where the issue is. Very interesting. And especially now with the relaxed policy between both countries, how that will begin to evolve. Okay? That's something to keep our eyes on. What was interesting to me also is the fact that here we are. Said, look, do you know why you think and act the way you do? You're conditioned to do that. And it goes back to colonialism. And just because it's 2015 doesn't mean that you're not a product of colonialism. You are. And if we begin with scrutinizing the Constitution and we look at the penal code, which is basically what was considered to be the crimes against the Constitution, the constitutional crimes. These aren't misdemeanor municipal laws that we're talking about. You're offending the Constitution of the country. And if you're offending the Constitution of the country, you're also back in the time, you're also offending the religion of the king. So you could be charged as being anti-patriotic as well. There are two aspects of the code that could be used against it. This is the thing, right? For us in America, I'm just saying, how about thinking, if you can, put people, you know, people who are listening, to put their minds into right here, right now in America, and interpret what we've been saying about these laws in the here and now. Let us assume that we are living here in the United States with these laws. What would that video look like? Foremost, all of the stuff that's put up and done about our religion on the internet would be illicit. Totally illegal. Can't do it. Let's start with that. Look at this. Let's go a little bit to further our conversation on some of these laws, which I think is important. By the way, I don't know if you received it or not. We put out a 21-point list. About what CLBA's mission has been about. That answers the original question of these programs. Why CLBA? Why the need for a church? And we put out 21 points.
Do you agree? Yes.
Do you with the title, do you agree?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Those that are listening, I suggest, highly recommend for them to read it. You can go to Church of the Lutheran Evangelii on Facebook and read it, or go to Obati Charter page on Facebook and read it. It totally supports the conversations that we'll be having. You know? There's the why.
And I love the do you agree, and I love the comments. I've been reading the comments since you put it up. Very, very interesting. And someone, I'm not going to call them out, but it was, they made the statement, I completely agree, how do we get this started? And it made me smile because that is the whole premise of these programs. How do we get started? By changing the way you think in your psychology. See, because a lot of people are confused about things, and I'm not exempt from that. We don't see the colonial structure in which we claim to practice what we do. It is very much enslaved and locked in. But ultimately, it's the individual's choice. Like the first one, do you agree about, let me scroll up, you ask, the first one is about funeral rites. Lukumi priest funeral and burial services, itutu, should be provided by Lukumi and not clergy of another religion. Well, how do you get started? You simply make the simple choice of not choosing. Yeah, exactly. It's a choice not to participate. So, for the person who said, oh, yeah, I agree, how do we get started? It all starts with you and your mentality and how you function out in the world. And
yes,
that's one of the things that I think that you've been really trying to hit home. One will go to Ochas and do the underground ritual. But once you step outside those door frames and you go to work, you go to your little events and you do this, it's almost like we're in slavery hiding. People hide their Aleckis. People hide, you know, when their kid makes Ocha and they go to public school. That's how you get started. You literally become what you truly are, which is a priest out in the world, out in this this so-called Christian world, and you are, you know, you live your Lukumi way instead of folding into the hegemony way of thinking, meaning the majority, and basically laying down and following the rule of law. I mean, Oba didn't go to the federal court for nothing. That's just really the bottom line. Hello, goodbye. It's very simple.
Well, let's change this a little bit. Let's go down those 21 points if you want, and then we'll continue with the laws later or thereafter.
Yes,
right?
It's good.
The original question of our presence is why was the need for a CLEA? What did we see, right? Did we envision and say, where's the need for this? These 21 points. Answer it. Okay. You just mentioned the funeral and burial services should not be provided by a member of another clergy of another religion. Well, that's not, we didn't have that right in the 70s down here in Miami. We did not have that right. Everyone the only option to register what religion you were in when you made the funeral arrangement and so on was Catholic. That was the closest thing. We were not listed. And our people were not told that by law they did not have to be listed. So I went into the funeral homes and argued this. Of course, there was resistance. Of course there was. Right? I went in there and argued the contrary. But I argued that through the empowerment of a corporation, which is a church, you see? Not an association, but a church charter. But how that empowers in the United States, right? I went in there and I said, okay, look, it's simple. I'm not going to argue anymore with you. By law, you cannot discriminate. By law, we should be listed and we're not. By law, you should be telling your customers that they can identify themselves as Lukumi, that they can register their deceased family member as a Lukumi, and that they are entitled by law for us to come in here and do our services, including the burial. Okay? So, you know, take off the crucifixes and all that stuff you put on the body. Take that stuff out of here because we got nothing to do with it. By law, they have to do it. So, encountered resistance, they had to do it. Why did they have to do it? Because I went in there and got in their face. And I demanded our civil rights. And I put up church. And I said, on behalf of this church, we're not asking you to do this. We're telling you why hasn't it not been done. And then you cannot interfere, Mr. Funeral Home. You have to accommodate it. Okay? So we got that done. That was the first thing we got done at FCLB. The second thing we got done was the double investment in religious observances.
And you've had a lot in the past couple of years, people calling you about this issue with their kids.
Yeah.
You know, making culture. Yeah, I remember one year I was like, man, if another person called, it was mind blowing, just the discrimination. And this, I believe, was on the East Coast. So it's like this goes down, family.
It happens. These things do happen. That's why we've done the work, is because these instances do come up, right? Well, you know, we won that. The public school system had to put it on the record and accept and accommodate. So our school kids can become priests and priestesses of this faith. And during the first year where they have to wear certain religious objects and their attire, and there's taboos that apply there, that these are to be accommodated by the public school system. They cannot discriminate. So we got that done, you know. Why? Because officially, case came up. It was challenged. And we won the challenge, again, not only by simple argument and by law argument, but the fact that this church saying, these are my priests and priestesses. Not an association. Point was, police officers. I pioneered the first law enforcement classes here, which were accredited. And I remember when I used to go in there, police officers that are members of our faith had to hide their stuff, their necklaces and other charms and other things. You had to have them. And they were registered in the police department as Catholic, not Lukumi, as Catholic. Well, that changed. That changed because it went into their legal division with their lawyers and went in as the CLBA and argued. And they had to change the policy. And I got finally to see our members of our religion wearing the necklaces under their uniform shirts, wearing their religious bracelets, because if a police officer can wear a watch, he can wear our bracelets. That's religious.
And there are a lot of Lukumi people who are in the police force. I was surprised.
A lot of them down in Miami for a long time, there's been a lot of them that are actually priests and priestesses, which are police officers.
Yeah, a lot.
So we got that done, right? Again, because we went into their legal division as CLBA and fought for those rights. The fourth point is that should Lukumi have the right to get married within their own religion through the means of another? This is the only religion that I know of where priests and priestesses go to another priest in another religion in the temple of another faith to get married. It's unheard of. And they're getting married in and by a minister and in a religion, Catholicism, Christianity, which says that we are an abomination to the Lord Jesus Christ because of our structure and so on, and our beliefs. To them, in the strictest interpretation, they classify us as satanic. But yet we still go and get married in these Christian churches. Now, CLBA restored the Lukumi traditional marriages.
Since you said that, Oba, I'm thinking, do you think that the reason why people don't do these things is because there's not a foundation to go out there and do that? Meaning, like, there are priests and priestesses who don't know how to do these things, so they're like, oh, I'm just going to, you know, do what I've always known.
Think you're on point. I think you're on point. One, most our people don't know how to do this because that's pretty much been lost.
Right.
And the reason why it's been pretty much been lost is because of the colonial laws that we've been talking about. Our people during colonialism could not get married in any other form other than walking into the altar of a Catholic church and being married by the Catholic priest. They had no option. So, you know, give that enough time, generational, right? Let that run through for several generations and see what happens. You lose it. And the new becomes the norm because it is the norm of the society because that's the state religion. Mm-hmm.
Wow.
There's an exception. It's that simple. It's not a complicated reason.
It's not, but I'm, you know, like, I just have, like, these groundbreaking moments sometimes when we talk on air. This whole system that was created, this colonial system, completely destabilized, basically, not only the economics of Lukumi, but the family structure. From the get-go, it's like, okay, I'm going to put you in these situations where you can't do these rituals, which then will literally break the family apart and bring them into this colonial system of doing it our way and letting them completely, I guess, not really forget their religion, but alter it to where it's not, I don't want to say not authentic in nature, but not fully authentic. It's little pieces of the pie. It's not the complete picture. You understand what I'm saying?
No, you're right. I mean, look, the whole colonial system was meant to convert everyone to Christianity. That was the intent over time. So how do you do that? Well, first and foremost, the way that you do that, and they did this, this is not, is you deculturize the group that you're targeting. So Africans were deculturized. And you do that in the most fundamental of ways, right? You take away their marriage rights. You take away their death rights. And so on. And you start stripping what is vital, right? You start learning, you simply take that out. You take the education out. For example, our African ancestors were not allowed to have educational centers. That's by law. Article 191. Article 191. Prohibited. Education had to be Catholic education.
It was the Bible, right?
Yeah, not only the Bible, but even if you got into a school, it was the material, everything, the whole educational system for the society was structured by the ethic, morals, and values of Catholicism. Everything had to be consistent by law in a manner of which was not contrary to Christian morals. Because there are other articles in the Constitution that could, anything that you could say or hypothetically argue in your reasoning, right? You could be accused of being a heretic. Because what you were suggesting was against the Catholic laws and ethics. Or you were directly offending Scripture. And don't forget, this is the 1800s. The Inquisition was still alive and well. Now, this was severe. Severe from a psychological standpoint, it was severe, right? It's not easy. pretty much, look, Article 225, for example, anyone that would, I'm just paraphrasing here, anyone that would offend the Catholic religion, including its sacred forms, which meant anything in terms of its beliefs or its religious objects, was arrestable. You would be arrested. So how do you process this when the best thing you do is just shut up? Right? Gestures were regulated by the Constitution. So if you made a particular face or hand gesture or body gesture or something that the priest
would consider it to be insulting or offensive to him as a minister or to the church or to Catholic doctrines, you were arrestable.
And you know, it's funny because these laws spread throughout the Caribbean, because before we got on there, I was looking at the slave codes for Brazil, the United States, and the rest of the Caribbean. And boy, let me tell you something, they're a humdinger. And it gets real complicated, especially in the Americas, because you have all these different colonies and so on and so forth. But going to the penal codes on controlling OBA, there is,
these are offenses to the Constitution.
Yeah. It's appalling. This is in the United States, though, and it goes along with Cuba. It talks about it. Most cities had laws controlling slave behavior in public. And then they give an example in Charleston, South Carolina, where slaves were not allowed to sweat, smoke, or walk with a cane. I said to sweat, smoke, or walk with a cane. And I just looked at that like, are you kidding me? And then they have another one where, and you talked about this on other shows, gatherings.
No, that was prohibited.
It was prohibited. And if you were to do a gathering, this is one of the United States colonial, I think it's in Virginia. If you had more than five people gathering together, there had to be a person, a white person there. If you were to leave the plantation, like if you wanted to take a stroll in nature, that wasn't going down. You had to have the slave master or a white person walking with the slave. Like, you had to have a permit. You couldn't just get up and
With a permit. Yeah.
You couldn't take like a quick stroll. I mean, like, these things are
no. That would not be legal. Exactly. Plus, if you were doing that, you're exposing yourself because you had these hunters, right?
Right.
That would see an African person wandering in the bushes. They'd snatch them, and they would. In America, they would throw away their legal authority to be out in the open like that.
Yep.
Any documentation that they had, they would just throw that away and kidnap them and resell them.
Well, wasn't that what 12 Years a Slave was all about?
We got that film to show us exactly how that was working.
Yeah.
So that's true. And yes, in Cuba we had similar municipal laws, right? Were pretty much in juxtaposition to what you're saying. Okay. But to look at that, to study that, we have to go to the different laws by provinces.
Absolutely.
And then when you do that research, then you start seeing this stuff popping up, you see? Some municipal laws were a little bit more relaxed than others, depending on what industries were prevalent in that area. But the variables weren't that significant from one to the next. But it's something that, you know, more than worth studying. I think it's something that people should really, it's time well spent. Let's just put it that way. I just keep reading this stuff and I keep thinking, if right here in our present life, we are here in America, and these are the conditions in which we must live by. All right? What is it? How do you deal with this? You know, one thing is reading about it. Another thing is watching it on some Hollywood production. I get people to come out to our farm project, for example, and they see the cotton growing on the trees. And, oh, how beautiful. I've never seen the cotton trees. You know, oh, my God, this is a beautiful planet. Da, 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 da. And you know what I say to everyone? I go, all right, this program is about learning about the plants and so on. I want you here during the summer, 90 or over 100 degree temperature, and I want you to dress in the manner in which slaves were allowed to dress. And I want you to stand over by these trees, and I want you to pick cotton with your hands for about 2 hours. Then I want you to meditate on that. Talk about it. Experience it. You gotta experience it. What was it like? You cannot know by the words on a paper. You cannot know by watching it from a film production. You cannot know. You gotta experience it. So come out here at 100 degrees and start picking cotton. See what you're. What is that gonna tell you? What is that going to show you?
And let me tell you, it wasn't no 2 hours. It was actually 15.
Well, I'm being kind because I know that within an hour, some people have complained that we've only been by the plants for like about 20 minutes. And they're having issues.
Wow.
It's bizarre. It is amazing. Programs in your words, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's stuff that in modern society we take for granted. But this is really something that this generation needs to review and really assimilate and really turn around. Yeah?
Well, I don't mean to blow up your spot, Ova, but I do have to mention this because I know when we first talked about CLBA and the things that the Pichardo family went through, it affected me. And the postcards that you showed me, the hate postcards that you got, and the stories, long hours. And family, when I say long hours, like, there were times that me and Oba would get on the phone at like 5 at night and the sun would be coming up and we'd still be on the phone. You would understand that. I mean, from my understanding and the stories and the things that you've shown me, you've experienced that for the essence of this community. I mean, them literally trying to burn the CLBA building down. You know, the government literally harassing you and trying to take you or your family out. I mean, just some of the things that you told me, it just, sometimes when you would tell me it for the first time, it would keep me up at night. I'm like, wow, that's like really crazy. Yeah.
Yeah, but these are actual stories in the here and now here in America, right?
Absolutely.
If it were before, if this stuff was under... If we were living under circumstances, we could not even have a church because the only one that had the right to designate, to classify someone as a religion was the Catholic Church. They're the ones that would do this. You could call yourself whatever you want. They were the ones targeted to say who you were. Isn't it? And so... We couldn't have even tried to open CLBA. It's simple.
We couldn't even have conversations.
Right. We couldn't have this conversation because we'd be arrested. It's pretty amazing. It really is. So anyway, I would like to keep it at that for the day, and then we'll continue our programs, and we'll continue to go down the list of these laws, and I certainly encourage everyone to go to the Facebook, again, Obapi Charo page or Church of the Lukumi Balaguaye page and read the 21 points. Do you agree? These are the things that we have accomplished since incorporating the church in 1974. And it begins to answer the question as to why was there a need for a church, and what has been accomplished, and we'll continue to discuss further what we're still accomplishing, which are really interesting and exciting programs.
Absolutely, and I also make sure, family, that you go back in the archives because there are three more parts before this, and start breaking these things apart. Start looking up the codes and bring questions to the forefront and begin to discuss them, because I'm telling you, I've been researching like crazy for the past like month on these things, and it's mind-blowing, because once you begin to connect the dots, if we really want to be to our highest potential, if you will, we have to break these things apart, and these things are not easy to talk about. They're literally taboo. People like, you know, we're literally blowing up the spot. However, if we want to be true to ourselves, like for real, and claim that we want to be broken free from that quote-unquote colonialized system, we have to begin to look at the habits and the way in which we are priests. It's very much important, if you will. So, family, go back into the archives. Come hang out with us. Obar Ernesto Pichardo and CLBA page, Center for Community Knowledge. Join all those pages and begin to ask questions, break things apart, things that you may have discovered. Let's share. We are literally doing a little anthropological experiment on air, if you will.
And exactly. I encourage the entire community. We need to study this, and we need to have a really in-depth conversation about this and self-analysis, right?
Absolutely.
Because it we've been programmed to think and behave in the context of all this kind of stuff. And like it's 2015, we believe in freedom of religion and so on and so forth, and yet we carry this within us, in our own psychology. So actually, it's self-inflicted nowadays. We're actually behaving and functioning in the manner in which they meant us to be. So it's a brainwash. So we really encourage everyone to research. So some of these things are available through Google, some of this material. So I encourage you to, both in Spanish and English. So I encourage everyone to kind of research that and look into it. And that's about it for today. Thank you for listening, folks. And we'll be back again with more information. We're going to keep scrutinizing this.
Absolutely. And thank you, family, for joining us on this wonderful Sunday. I send you so much love. And until next time, family, bye-bye.